So the real object was to prevent American citizens of any sort from daring to think or talk against the determination of big business to reduce Asia to colonial subserviency to American industry, to reweld the chains on Africa, to consolidate United States control of the Caribbean and South America, and above all, to crush socialism in the Soviet Union and China. That was the object of this case. This object every intelligent American knew. Our leading thinkers and educators were perfectly aware of this assault on the basis of the democratic process in America. Despite this, most Americans of education and stature did not say a word or move a hand. This is the most astonishing and frightening result of this trial. We five are free, but America is not. The absence of moral courage and intellectual integrity, which our prosecution revealed, still stands to frighten our own nation and the better world. It's clear still today that freedom of speech and of thinking can be attacked in the United States without the intellectual and moral leaders of this land raising a hand or saying a word in protest or defense, except in the case of the saving few. Their ranks did not include the heads of the great universities, the leaders of religion, or most of the great names in science. Than this fateful silence, there is on earth no greater menace to present civilization. I find, curiously enough then, that my experience in this fantastic accusation and criminal process is tending to free me from that racial provincialism which I always recognized, but which I was sure would eventually land me in an upper realm of cultural unity led by my people. I have discovered that a large and powerful portion of the educated and well-to-do Negroes are refusing to forge forward in social leadership of anyone, even their own people, but are eager to fight social medicine for sick whites or even sicker Negroes. As I have related, there came the indictment and trial, and after long struggle, the acquittal. But that was not the end. The publication of my story of this persecution in my book, In Battle for Peace, the collaboration of Shirley Graham, my open thanks to the communists of the world for their help in my defense, and my clear stand in favor of the Soviet Union intensified the enmity of those who rule. My defense of the Rosenbergs in speech and writing, and my denunciation of the hounding and imprisonment of the communists as unjust and barbarous did the same. All this made my enemies and the federal government take a determined stand to ensure my destruction. The secret police swarmed in my neighborhood asking about my visitors. My manuscripts and those of Shirley Graham were refused publication by reputable commercial publishers. My mail was tampered with or withheld. Negro newspapers were warned not to carry my writings nor mention prominently my name. Colleges ceased to invite my lectures, and Negro colleges no longer asked for my lectures or my presence at commencement exercises. A whispering campaign continually intimated that some hidden treason or bribery could be laid at my door if the government had not been lenient. The central office of the NAACP refused to let local branches invite me or sponsor my lectures. I was refused the right to speak on the University of California campus because of the NAACP protest. It was a bitter experience, and I bowed before the storm. But I did not break. I found new friends and lived in a wider world than ever before, a world with no color line. I lost my leadership of my race. The colored children ceased to hear my name." Unquote. From the autobiography of W.E.B. Du Bois, published in 1963, 5 years after his death.